podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm so happy you're listening to this, my friend. This is Natasha Bozilovic, public speaking coach and trainer. Can't wait to share this new episode with you. Welcome back to Speak with Power, my dear friends. Today, I have another fascinating guest for you, Dr. Eugene Manley Jr. Dr. Eugene Manley is a biomedical scientist, nonprofit CEO, and leadership strategist who helps professionals speak with clarity and authority in high-stakes environments, my friends. And as a neurodivergent leader who has navigated academia, healthcare, and executive spaces, he teaches how to communicate hard truths without losing credibility, influence, or impact. Welcome, Eugene.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Natasha. I'm so excited to be here and speak and help your hopefully give your audience some tools and tips that they can use.
Thank you. And this is exactly what we need. Like I told you earlier, communication, but especially in high stakes environments. Hey, that's, we don't talk about that enough. And also how to really communicate that hard truth. Nowadays, there's so much of hard truth that we probably don't know how to exactly communicate with grace.
Because you're afraid of saying this, or you'd be afraid of being labeled stubborn or too difficult. But, you know, if you let things fester, that's not good for your own mental health, and then you end up having burnout.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And well, so you teach people about communication, and you are the biomedical scientist, which is fascinating. I'm really interested in neurodivergence, like we said before, also in neuroscience and everything that's connected with that, for sure. But you also teach communication. You help people with that. Why specifically high stakes environments and these hard truths? Why did you decide to focus on that?
Well, high stakes for me is just basically when there's pressing need. And in my instance, it was the hospital system when I had surgery last year. And while I had reconstructive, I had an ankle fracture, the fracture healed, but then we had to do reconstructive surgery of the foot. And while I and the surgeon had a comprehensive plan in place post-surgery that included skilled nursing, you can plan everything you want, but sometimes other people have different agendas, and then they interfere when they shouldn't. And so in my instance, we had the hospital physical therapist misrepresent and straight up lie in the medical records and said I had no pain and could ambulate, even though I have a non-weight-bearing surgery, and I'm non-weight-bearing for 6 weeks. So I cannot have this surgery and have no pain 36 hours later. But that is what was wrote in the chart. And based on that, and then the OT agreed with that person, and then the hospitalist asked me about my ability to pay, which should not have been their function. But because at that time I was on Medicaid because I launched the LLC, they assume poor, black, and on Medicaid. So we don't, this patient doesn't know and doesn't deserve anything, when it shouldn't matter if I'm on Medicaid or not. You should be able to deliver equitable care to everyone based on what they need. But it appears the hospital system was determined to make sure they push me out of that hospital, misrepresent stuff, and then try to get me to be stuck paying. And so, and the friction was really, the surgeon tried to get a follow-up with the physical therapist. The physical therapist did not respond for 5 days until the surgeon finally complained higher up. And then they finally met, and they wouldn't change their assessment. So somehow they thought they knew more than a surgeon. Now, mind you, I'm in the bed in pain, miserable, can't really speak. I've lost my voice. And I'm sitting here like, why are you not listening to me? And I was trying to speak, and I had a medical proxy, which was also interesting, which I learned. But my proxy was based in Florida. And what I learned along the way is, if they think hospital systems will use this thing called AO3 or alert and oriented times three. So if you can say the date, time, and the place where you're at, they will then say you're alert and oriented. So then they will just come ask you questions like crazy. And then, well, he was alert. I'm like, I clearly was not lucid. I'm on Percocets every 4 to 6 hours for like a good month and a half. And so, but they use that basis to say, well, they didn't need to call my proxy. So they were just trying to lie on stuff. And And it was high stakes because I was the one who ended up not getting the skilled nursing that I needed. And it ended up being stuck at home 3+ weeks before any of my friends could show up because there was not a plan for me to be at home because my place is not navigable by myself. But that's not what the hospital system wrote. So it is really became important to teach people how to navigate, advocate care, how to report when systems aren't doing things right, and try to get them held accountable.
So what, okay, how? So in those kind of situations, and I'm sure there are lots of situations like this, maybe not specifically in healthcare, maybe it can be at work, maybe wherever, but yes, there are so many of these kind of high stakes situations and people don't advocate for themselves. Or sometimes people don't know what to say, how. So what would you suggest?
So the suggestion is first you have, as hard as it is, you have to try to mentally remove yourself from the situation and take the emotion out, which I know is hard for people. And then you have to piece back, okay, what is the motivation of the person? What are my motivations? What can we do to get things documented? So first thing, always document any interaction. Do not trust people to say anything verbally. I've learned that the hard way.
Great.
If it is verbal, then they can say, well, we didn't say this. And this happens no matter which environment you're in. You know, you could have a crappy boss or a misogynistic leader or anyone or a racist. You know, they could say whatever, but if it is not in writing, then it didn't exist. So make sure you say, get anything in writing that they say, anything that you want confirmation in writing. And then if they try to get you to do stuff that you think is illegal or unethical, also say, in this meeting, you wanted this. So I'm confirming that you want this. Or if they say, well, you didn't do this report, you say, well, I asked you at this time for this report, or I gave you this report at this time. And I said, when do you want to give it back to me, or when am I expecting it back? So put the communication in there. So whether or not it changes anything, it protects yourself. Because what a lot of people don't realize is, unfortunately, in most organizations, HR is not there to protect you. HR is there to protect the company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you always document, make sure it's an email, and then you have confirmation, and then you keep a log of everything that is happening, not just that situation, but other situations, because typically if one thing happens, that means other things are happening. And what you want to do is be able to protect yourself in case someone down the road said, well, we're going to fire them, or they're not a good listener, or something like that. You keep all your receipts, because like I said, you just never know at all when you're going to need it. And say, you know, you can protect yourself so you don't get a bad mark. And so this is the way, you know, document, write, report. Like in hospital systems, you can report bad behavior to hospital leadership. If you do, write certified letters to all people in your care team and the hospital leadership. You can file with the Joint Commission on Hospital Accreditation if it's a Joint Commission accredited hospital. If you believe there's Medicare or Medicaid fraud, you can apply and send a report to Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. And then you can also file a complaint with your insurance, because sometimes they would like to know if they're getting scammed, and especially when it's not your fault. And so these are things I learned on the fly that I did not realize I needed to know, because I just never in my life have had someone bold-faced lie in my medical records. And I was in so much pain and on opioids, so I couldn't really even read the records in real time. I didn't read the records until 3.5 weeks later. So that's why I said it's really important to make sure you read your stuff in real time, keep a record, and protect yourself.
Yeah, I know one of my friends, she would send emails even when they have verbal meetings and they would just talk on the phone. She then would send an email and say, so this is what we discussed. And that would be a document already, because emails can be proof. And then if, for example, the supervisor didn't write back and say, no, this is wrong, then it's already, when it's there in the email, then that can be proof. Another, like, I know my brother and I know one more person, so they would record some of the meetings, and they had them basically like the audio recording of the supervisor speaking, like insulting basically a person and saying things.
And that gets tricky about recording. It depends on what state you're in, if that is allowed. But sometimes, you know, if it is that bad at an org, then recording will protect yourself. So I understand why some people feel the need to do it because, like I said, when you're in hierarchical systems and top-down systems, usually the people at the lowest levels are never the ones who have any agency. And then mm-hmm. when you're trying to move up a system, it's like, well, do I speak out? Do I not speak? Do I sound assertive? Do I just be submissive, for lack of a better term? And then, because you, anytime you join an org, you're still trying to figure out the group dynamics. There's this thing where we want you to be innovative, but you have to determine how innovative they want you to be, because and it takes time to learn that system, because they can do anything to hire you and market. We do this, but wait till you see how things are actually put in operation to see how much leeway you have to speak up. See how people are treated if they say, hey, I'm going to leave for a new job, and like see how they're treated, or and see how people are treated when they're leaving. Like it will tell you a sign about leadership in an organization.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that is a really important point, actually, about speaking up, because a lot of people don't. And even with these situations that you're discussing, that you're describing, high stakes, a lot of times people will not know how to speak assertively. They will not want to speak up because they would be afraid that, well, I will just get fired. Or why would I even speak up? I'd better be quiet so that I could keep my paycheck and stuff like that. Okay, so how can we do that with wisdom and using the right timing, tone, clarity effectively? What do you teach us?
I think you have to, like I said, when you do this stuff, you have to write it in a way that doesn't sound accusatory.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it very much is accusatory. But you have to say, okay, you know, in this meeting, we discussed this, and I want to confirm that these were the action items, and then this is what's supposed to be followed up. Is this correct or not? So write it in a way that they don't feel attacked. Mm-hmm. Write it in a way that's cordial and respectful, but also still make sure you protect. So you have to find a way to embed the stuff that protects you from any repercussions. So it takes skill. It's not easy by any mm-hmm. stretch of the imagination, but, you know, part of learning how to write is learning those subtle cues in communication. You know, maybe use a thesaurus or even ChatGPT, which I don't advise, but, you know, but learning how to, you sort of have to learn how to learn how certain people work, and then sort of speak to them in terms they like. You know, I know, like of a narcissist, say, oh, you're so great, you know, this is our follow-up, and just put your little items, so make it sound like they are the one that came up with the idea. It is so funny, the stuff you have to jump through sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we heard all of that about even a husband and wife sometimes. Oh, make it... like come up with an idea, but make sure that they think it was their idea.
Yes.
So do you think that this kind of manipulation is a quote unquote, do you think people would read through it and understand and see it, like in leadership or somewhere? Or do you think that that's valid to use?
It is valid depending on how egotistical they are.
Hmm.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about, like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Usually people's ego gets the better of them, so if they like to be praised, praise them. But don't lose your autonomy. So try to, you know, if you still need the job, it's this catch 22 of, I still need my job. And so how do I stay employed but not rock the boat? So you try to keep your interactions. You can keep your interactions minimal, write and document everything that went wrong or wasn't said, and then keep your communication with them to what absolutely needs to be set. You can still keep your own records, like on this day they said and did this, and then when they canceled this meeting when it was scheduled, and then just rescheduled again. And I'm like, I'm tired of my meetings getting rescheduled. Like, I'm not chopped liver. Respect my time and space. Or, you know, mm-hmm. you when it really becomes a thing where you want to protect your after work hours. Like, if my thing is I work 9 to 5, then there should be no expectation that you're getting an email from me, I'm going to answer an email after 5. Mm-hmm. Just whatever. So whatever boundaries you have set up, make sure you stick to them, because if you go in and let them start taking your, then they'll just keep taking more and more and more. And then you really have a harder ground to stand on. So go in with your boundaries and set those up and make sure people know what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Boundaries from the very beginning. They have to be clear for us. Also, people have to know what their boundaries are and then communicate them to the team or to leadership or to anybody around.
Yes. And, you know, and interviewing is such a, you know, people give you all this advice about interviewing. And I find interviewing is a crapshoot. But maybe it's because I also have ADHD. So the standard stuff for me never works. Like, you must smile. You must make eye contact. You must be engaging. I'm like, or you must answer this question this way. I'm like, this is performance art. You know, I have ADHD. Mm-hmm. My brain is 10 miles an hour. It's a miracle if I slow down to wait for you to finish the question when I've already probably predicted what you're going to say. So it is the challenging thing for neurodivergent people is working in hierarchical environments. It's, you know, typically, I can't say all, but when you're dealing with someone neurodivergent, it's sort of tell us what you want, what you need, and when you want it, and then just get out of our way and let us do it. But give us the timing and the guidelines, but then don't change them in the middle. Like, just tell us what you need, but don't come in and micromanage. You know, that is the worst thing you do to someone that's neurodivergent. Like, you want to micromanage, and then I'm supposed to get started then if you're changing everything and it makes no sense. It is the biggest battle for neurodivergent people is micromanagement.
Yeah, and just not understanding people, not trying to understand the individual approaches and the strengths and weaknesses of, and like you said at the beginning, right, before we even started recording, there are 20% of,
yep,
of workforce.
20% of the workforce is estimated to be neurodivergent. And I think of this about 60 to 70% report being tense or stressed at work due to micromanagement.
And you know what?
Yeah. Yep. And of those that aren't neurodivergent, I think it was 36%.
Okay. You know what I'm thinking about it? Okay, 20% are neurodivergent. Sometimes I'm thinking they're probably more because, like, I'm not. It was never diagnosed. But I think I have ADHD in a way or some other even ways of neurodivergence. Like there's a little bit – we did some test and there's just a couple percent of autism is even in there. I feel like all of us have – some neurodivergence. Like, our brains are different, and the more and more, like, with years, with the development of the world, with AI now, I think it even changes. We're not even born with that, but some things are changing in our brain, and we start thinking differently and function differently. And if you try micromanaging, if you try looking at everyone the same way and just telling them what to do, you have to look at everyone differently and understand that there are different approaches to work and to getting things done.
And yep, and there's a book. There was a business leadership book. It was a training program. I think, oh my God, I forgot the name of the book, but it unlocks your personality or work traits. And I'm drawing a blank on the name of the book right now. And it's like, they say people have roughly 35 personality types. And then you do this assessment and it'll give you your top five traits at that particular time. And what this says is that as opposed to focusing on your weaknesses, which you can do, you should focus on the strengths that you do well. And so there are different people in teams that do things well. So amplify what they do well so they can contribute better than to try to make them fit and do something that's not inherently in their personality. And if you can understand that and grasp that, then you tend to have a leader that understands how people work, how they function. You have to motivate certain people different ways. You have to understand that some people need to know every piece of information. Some people need to know very little. And a great leader understands what specific people need, how to help them upskill, how to celebrate if they leave and get a new job. Like, you want a leader that is happy if you leave because you've outgrown what you're doing. But if you're in a place where, you know, you're afraid to speak up, you know, you're belittled, you're called stupid, or the lowest level staff, like your custodial staff, are treated like subhuman, then it's probably not a good environment to be in at all.
That's so true. And well, you know, I think who you're talking about is Clifton StrengthsFinder,
yes,
right?
Yes, I just couldn't remember.
Yeah. And even before they were called Clifton, they were Gallup StrengthsFinder.
Yep.
Remember at first? And then it was because it was Clifton. And I think Marcus Buckingham was the one who was writing all those books, First Break All the Rules and Put Your Strengths to Work. And they created those 34 strengths. And then, yeah, I've taken because I was so obsessed about it. That's why I know right away. I knew what you were talking about because I took them several times and got the even all of them, the 10, right? So yep. It's fascinating. And it is so helpful.
Yep. And they would change at different points in your life and career. Like maybe if you're more of a leadership role, you might change your personality. It doesn't mean that you change per se as a person, but it changes how you think about how things work and operate. And that's perfectly fine. And so, but I really love it because it teaches you to focus on amplifying what you do well, as opposed to your weakness, we have to bring some. You can, but if it's going to come at the expense of what they do great, don't waste their time.
No, yeah, that's right. And it's like, we work a lot of times, we work in a team. And usually, like, even I see it in my team. There are people, we all have different strengths and we complement each other and we can help, we can use other people's strengths and weaknesses. And that is what helps when you know, and when you can say, you know what, these little details and putting things in charts and understanding, and like, that's not my weakness, but that's not my strength, it's my weakness. But it's my other teammate actually strength. They love it. They love charts and sheets, spreadsheets and everything. Oh, thank God. So now they will be the ones doing it and they can remind me if I forget.
Bingo. And then you have this, what's the word? Division of labor, but then collectively you move everything forward much, much more productively. And ironically, on the side, I've been creating sort of an assessment to help people determine if they should stay in an org or group, pivot to another org or subgroup in that organization, or if they should leave. It's literally, I'm finishing developing it now. It's a 35 question framework that asks about leadership, promotion, how people are treated, you know, accountability, respect, and it covers the multiple aspects of businesses and sort of helping you determine, okay, is this a place I can grow? Will I think I can be here 1 year or 2 year or 5 years? And if any of your scores are low, then just start planning your exit. You know, in the past, we used to be told you have to stay at a job forever. You must stay more than a year. And like, no, some people would disagree with this, but why stay to be miserable and have excess stress? And especially when you're someone that's typically a black person, like a woman or male, and it's like you're already under the microscope and you're already dealing with external systemic and structural issues. Then you're going to deal with it in the workplace. And then you have to try to put on this face to stay and work. And then you like, all right, how much stress is it worth? And so the sort of things I teach people, know your value, know your worth, and you don't have to stay where you're going to be degraded, demeaned, or debased.
That's so true.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today and let us surprise you.
True. And that it helps to also know, and I think that what you're doing is helping people understand themselves, know themselves, and then make the decisions based on that and not just stay in the environment where your strengths and your best traits are not being amplified and not being leveraged and really used for the best. So speaking about that, about our personality, some of us do feel a little bit too much, like neurodivergent, ADHD, for example, or those loud, energetic. I sometimes feel that way. Sometimes we could feel not enough. But let's say so speak with power, right? And how can we speak with power, but without being labeled too much?
This is an issue. Well, not an issue. This is a thing with neurodivergence. You know, we're hyper, we're animated. And so we, as some neurodivergent, have to learn, I wouldn't say coping mechanisms, but strategies to fit in more traditional environments. And I would not say lose your personality. So some mindfulness, some things that you can do are, you know, I like the concept of body doubling. So what that means is whether it's work or at a coffee shop or whatever, you have someone that's near you that is doing work. It doesn't have to be your work, but they could be just doing some kind of work. So then mm-hmm. the executive dysfunction doesn't kick in and you say, okay, I've got to get my stuff done because someone is near me and they're working on something. Things mm-hmm. that I have found that work for me, I get some of my greatest thoughts when I'm walking. When I'm walking mm-hmm. and talking, unfortunately, I never record when I'm walking and talking. So I miss so many things because I think with my mind, my brain races so much. And then when my mind is racing and I'm getting it out, I'm sort of at the same time processing and thinking through what I want to say. And then it comes mm-hmm. out such with great clarity than if I'm just sitting at the desk talking. I'm like, yeah, I think the walking disconnects the wires and it lets me focus. Mm-hmm. The other thing I found works, which doesn't necessarily work in a corporate environment, is I wear headphones and I usually have some kind of music, usually some kind of house or techno. Not that you have to use that, but I just need some kind of background noise that's not ambient. Because the neurodivergent people do not like white noise. That's like the equivalent of hearing the nails on a chalkboard. You know, it grates your ear. So I listen to music to just have some background noise, which is also, I can sit in a coffee. I just need background noise. I got a hum going on and I can just sort of do. So you learn coping mechanisms. And what I've also learned simply with people, because I can sometimes get animated, I say, okay, if you're going to tell me something, I can listen. But sometimes I say, okay, give me 20, 30 minutes to get back to you. Because sometimes mm-hmm. with ADHD, you've spent your whole life getting attacked about what you can't do, how you must act, how you must act. So you absorb everything inside. And so it feels visceral if you're getting bad news, even if it's not that bad. So what I tell people, just give me 20, 30 minutes. Let me process what was said. And then let me calm down, because I know sometimes my brain is like, and then I'll give you some clarity of response. But that mm-hmm. is, that takes a lot of emotional intelligence and the company understanding how you work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it actually helps with being present, right? Because a lot of times we can be, especially when our thoughts are racing and we have to bring them back together. It helps with saying, okay, I need a little bit of time and I need to take a breather. I need to just sit and maybe meditate or maybe just think and put my thoughts together and then give the answer. Yeah. And then be present while doing that and not worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if you catch me verbally, I'll say something and it may be right, but then it's going to be the initial response as opposed to the nuanced, thought-provoking response that I would normally have. But, you know, but you really need a environment that understands that about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Any other things that you do to stay present, to have that leadership presence, even when it's not easy in different situations?
Sometimes the hardest thing, here's a trick when you're neurodivergent. I know this is going to sound counterintuitive. People believe you are only paying attention when you're looking at people. Mm-hmm. But often when we're neurodivergent, if we're looking at you, that means we're not paying attention at all. Because it means we're trying to focus and we're not listening. So if we are here and here, and that means our brain is absorbing information and processing, you're probably going to come up with a question. But if you say, focus here, or you must smile, then you're going to interrupt the whole flow. And there's like, nope, but that is hard to get people to understand. It is really, mm-hmm. really hard because they think you're not focused. It's, oh, no, I'm here. Now, if you see me on my phone, that's a different story. But if I am just looking here and here, no, I'm engaged. Because sometimes mm-hmm. what we do as well, which is that whole, you know, wanting to fire out questions, and that sometimes can be interpreted as rude. You know, well, here's something, and we have something we may want to relate to, and then we want to get it out, not because we're trying to interrupt, but because if we don't get it out then, more than likely mm-hmm. we're going to forget about it, and then it'll be a couple of days later when we remember. So just trying to, you know, breathe, do some mindfulness, Try to listen and just hope people understand that you're wired differently. It doesn't mean you're bad. You just wire it differently, and that they just need to sort of work around that. Like, I know some people, you know, you have bosses that want to give you all these verbal instructions. Don't give verbal, you know, because especially with us, it is like, okay. Like, I'm not writing this down. It is not going to be remembered. So, but you have to ask for that. And that sometimes is hard because people say, well, you don't pay attention. I'm like, it's not that I don't pay attention. It's just I'm unable to recall what you just said because it is in the moment. So just so you have to sometimes you need accommodation. Sometimes you don't. It just really depends on the work environment. But I think because of often how much neurodivergent people go through in workspaces, just navigating life in academia, many end up having to leave orgs and develop and find their own companies or consulting because then they have the space to do the stuff they want without these restrictions. You must be this way. You must answer this. You must talk this way. You must be cordial. It's like, I'm cordial and respectful, but why do I have to do it like this? And so, because we always are the why people.
Yes, we need to know. And it is so important to know that everyone is wired differently and just see it as an or not notice some kind of a behavior or approach and say, oh, that's different from mine, which means it's wrong or something is weird about it. No, that's just how people perceive information. Or just I'm totally the same way if I listen, because there are so many thoughts that are going on through my mind. If I'm listening to instructions and if I don't write it on a sticky note, then I will forget.
Because, oh, I know the sticky note.
Because
the
there
sticky
are so
note,
many other things.
Oh, the sticky note on the computer. Oh, my God. Yes, I have been there.
Yeah. It's like everywhere. Everywhere I have them on the desk, on the computer. Like right now on my laptop, I have two sticky notes.
Yep, the sticky
actually
notes
on both sides.
Yep, that the sticky note tells you, okay, this is something important that has to be done. And usually it has a time that it needs to be done as well.
Yes, yeah. Because I also, I most likely would forget if I don't write it down. Oh my goodness, that's so true. But the main idea is that we are different and we need to understand ourselves and we need to treat others also with.
At DSW, we ask the important questions like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
This grace and with understanding that we have different approaches and ways of working.
Yep, and we just, unfortunately, you know, spend so much of our lives trying to fit in spaces that don't want us to be there or I'm going to be in this in crowd, but then, you know, you aren't famous enough. You aren't calm enough. You aren't rich enough. I'm like, I'm just me. And so I end up being a loner, not because I'm a loner as a person. It's just, it's easier for me than to fake it to be in crowds that don't want me. So, but that takes a lot of emotional intelligence as well to just be comfortable being by yourself.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we need to be comfortable in our own company first before we even want to be with other people. That's really true. Thank you, Eugene. This has been amazing. I'm not letting you go yet. I will ask you my favorite question at the end. But before that, I want to make sure that people can find you. So where do we invite them first?
So if you want to find me, you can follow me on LinkedIn. It's Eugene Manley Jr., PhD. I believe it, yes. Eugene Manley Jr. is my name, but it's Eugene Manley Jr., PhD, is my LinkedIn. We have the nonprofit Sheck Foundation, https://sheck.org, and the socials for that are STEMMCHEQ. And last piece, specifically those looking at leadership and program development and speaking, I run the Innovation for Impact Consulting, LLC, and that website is innovationforimpactllc.com. So I do a lot of my leadership workforce training programs. I literally just launched it this month. So I'm starting to put the programs in place right now.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And we will put all of the links in the show notes, friends, so you don't have to maybe remember, but you can always, if you are driving, you can rewind and listen again to the links. So, Eugene, I would love to invite you to imagine that you're on a stage and the whole world is listening to you right now. You have 60 seconds to say something to the world. What will you say?
60 seconds to say something. I would say, one, you are a unique individual and that you should have the ability to do whatever you want in life and that you should go follow the path that brings you pleasure and happiness. Because a lot of times people are afraid to do entrepreneurship or afraid to make a move or afraid to study abroad because, well, what if I don't know people? What if I don't have money? Like, you only learn and grow as a person when you go and do something on your own, and then you either it works out great or but then you learn something, then you can add that to your other toolkit and tool set, and then you become the person you are meant to be as opposed to what you are shackled to.
Mm-hmm. Or supposed to what other expect you to be.
Exactly.
See. Mm-hmm.
Was that
yes.
60 seconds?
Yes, yes. I think that was even a little less, though. That was perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Eugene. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for you, my dear friends, remember, you can go click on the links, continue learning from Eugene and start working with him. And remember, you have a message in your heart, so go out there into the world, share it, and always, always speak with power.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.